Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. Over the New Year period, it was announced that Toby Young, the Spectator writer, amongst other things, has been appointed to the government's new Office for Students. So what is this Office for Students, and why is Toby Young, a talented writer, qualified for this job? I'm Fraser Nelson, and Toby joins me now. So Toby, Spectator readers don't need to be sold on what a good writer you are, but are you really qualified to advise the government on higher education policy?
Well, that's a good question, Fraser. The new Office for Students, which was created by the Higher Education and Research Act, which was passed last year, will have a number of responsibilities. One of them is to make sure universities are discharging their obligation to widen participation. Another is to put a new process in place for the establishment of new providers in the sector and granting them university accreditation, thereby increasing competition and hopefully lowering tuition fees in due course. And it's also responsible for making sure universities uphold their commitment to free speech. I think I'm sort of tangentially qualified in all three areas. In the first area, I mean, I've been involved in widening participation since I was at Oxford in the mid-80s. I was involved in outreach, went and visited sixth forms with no history of sending kids to Oxford or Cambridge, and tried to encourage sixth formers to apply. And I've been doing that kind of work, visiting sixth forms, talking to sixth formers, encouraging them to apply to high tariff universities ever since. I'm a Fulbright commissioner, and the Fulbright Commission, among other things, works with the Sutton Trust to try and secure scholarships for students from disadvantaged backgrounds to study at US universities. What else? I mean, I've helped set up four schools, one of which is a secondary school. And this year, some of the students will be applying to universities. I know about it from that end as well. When it comes to entrance of new providers into this sector, I have some experience of reform in the public education sector.
Might that point be why your inclusion on this? There's 12 people on the board, aren't there?
It may be more. I'm not quite sure. That's right. Exactly right.
But we've got people there. You know, some of them are from the sector, some of them aren't. You've got David Palfreyman, who's an actor and musician. You've got Katia Hall from HSBC. You know, there's a lot of people who aren't involved in the higher education sector, but your appointment has created the most controversy. Now, partly that's because you've got so many people on Twitter who enjoy sparring with you, I suppose. But partly, might it be seen that your real specialism is in taking new entrants into the education sector? You've done that with schools with the four you're involved in. You were also head of a new schools network that was involved in doing this on a far larger scale. So appointing you might be Joe Johnson's way of saying that I want new players to enter the university sector, and I would quite like to do for universities what Michael Gove did for schools.
Well, I mean, I think Joe Johnson certainly would like to see more providers entering the sector and to see a bit more competition. I think he'd like to see prices falling, tuition fees falling for that reason. And I think he'd probably like to see some innovation in the sector as well. So institutions offering two-year, perhaps more vocational degrees, but which still have university accreditation. But I don't think there's a great deal more to it than that. I don't think he's trying to send a signal to the sector or ruffle any more feathers than he already has. I mean, I think, as you say, one of the reasons that my appointment has caused such a fuss is because, you know, I'm an outspoken Tory and a defender of the government's education reforms and the previous government's education reforms. And I think this is a sector that is, you know, it's no secret, is completely dominated by the left. I mean, many people have complained on Twitter that I don't have any direct experience of working in universities. That's not strictly true. I did actually work as a teacher at Cambridge and Harvard for a bit back in the late 80s. But broadly speaking, that's true. But it's ridiculous to think that a regulator of a sector should be entirely staffed by people who have direct experience of actually working with the sector and running organisations in that sector. If that was the case, the regulator would just be a case of the sector marking its own homework. All regulatory boards consist of people who have some experience of working in the sector being regulated, and also people with some experience from outside the sector. And I think the OFS board is no exception. So it's ridiculous, really, that people have been singling out the fact that I'm not actually a vice chancellor as a reason for disqualifying.
Right, but you can understand the general thrust of it. I mean, during the Blair years, they loved filling quangos with people who were sympathetic to the Labour Party, the sort of thing the Spectator denounced all the time. You yourself have probably written some pieces about the sort of shammy Jack Rabbati phenomenon. So it's understandable, isn't it, that some people see in your appointment the right trying to do the same, getting people who are supportive of the party into a position which they're not unqualified for, but still you do wonder whether the main qualification is your credentials as a Conservative Praetorian.
I don't think it's understandable so much as hypocritical, as you say. For decades, when Labour has been in power, Labour has appointed Labour apparatchiks to quangos and regulators. So it's a bit rich for them to suddenly turn around and accuse Jo Johnson of making a political appointment, as though they'd never done that before. But actually, if you look at the composition of the board of the OFS, I think it represents a broad cross-section of political views. I mean, Sir Michael Arbour, for instance, the chairman of the board, worked for Tony Blair for many years and was one of the people Blair tasked with delivering his public service reforms. He, I think, was a Labour councillor and stood as a Labour candidate. So it's not kind of completely outrageous that in addition to some people with Labour sympathies on the board, there should be one or two with Conservative sympathies. I mean, I think it just reflects the fact that the board is going to be balanced and represent a wide diversity of views. But having said that, I mean, I don't regard myself in any way as a political appointee. I intend to be, objective, impartial and fair when carrying out my responsibilities as a trustee.
Right, but another thing that you've written about and what you're associated with is the importance of having free speech on campus. Now, I was interested to hear Johnson say on Boxing Day that this was another priority of his. So I wonder, will this new Office for Students somehow manage to, expand the parameters of debate, crack down on people who get no platform from university? I can't quite see the mechanism by which it will try to promote free speech on campus.
Yeah, well, I think that is one of the things Joe would like this new regulator to do. And I think when universities register with the Office for Students, they'll be submitting their charters, their founding principles and so forth. Nearly every university, every English university, it'll just have responsibility for the English university sector, not the Welsh, Scottish, or Northern Irish university sector. But every university is committed to free speech and publicises its commitment to free speech in various founding documents and charters and so forth. And I think one of the responsibilities that the OFS will be making sure, on behalf of students, that universities uphold that commitment.
So if you look at who bans speakers, it tends to be students. I mean, it's pretty difficult to say to, some student society, actually, we, the regulator, forbid you from no platforming, Jacob Rees-Mogg or somebody like that. It's not the sort of thing that a regulator has got the tools to ensure, surely.
Well, exactly how it'll work, I'm not sure. I think it's something that the OFS will probably discuss when the board meets for the first time. Just to respond to what you just said, I mean, it often, the various extremist political groups on campus who do try and no platform speakers whose views they disagree with, often speakers on the left as well as speakers on the right, so Peter Tatchell, Germaine Greer, they've all been no platform in the last few years, not just Peter Hitchens, who was recently no platform at Manchester. But they claim to be representing the views of all students and protecting students from being triggered and being psychologically damaged from listening to these toxic views and so forth. But actually, they don't represent all students. Often they only represent a tiny minority who are bullying the rest into going along with their views. And I think if the Office for Students can stiffen the backbone of university authorities and make sure that they discharge their responsibilities to uphold free speech and provide platforms for people whose views may be unpopular, they may be dissenting, they may not be consistent with the orthodoxy on campus, but nonetheless they have a right to speak and students should be able to hear them and have their own views challenged. I think the other thing to bear in mind is that it won't just be today's generation of students that
the office for students' interests. It won't just be their interests that they'll be safeguarding, but the interests of all students in the future as well. And it's not in students' interests for unorthodox views to be silenced on campus.
Right. And finally, Toby, since your appointment, people have been inevitably trawling through your various columns in The Spectator, finding controversial phrases of yours. Is there anything you'd like to apologise for?
I wrote a piece in The Spectator in 2012, so almost 6 years ago now, in which I railed against the policy of inclusion, and it was widely misinterpreted as railing against the policy of including children with disabilities in mainstream education, which is certainly not something I object to, and indeed the four schools I've helped set up do have children with disabilities in them, and we have wheelchair ramps and so on and so forth. And I've clarified that. I was saying that often inclusion became an excuse for the Labour Party, a fig leaf for dumbing down the curriculum, so successive Labour administrations could then point to improving GCSE results as evidence that they were improving public education. And it was defending Michael Gove, who at the time was proposing to bring back O-level. So it was really just saying, you know, let's not dumb down education, let's not say because some children might struggle to pass these O-levels, not children with special educational needs, but just some children. That's not a good reason for not trying to raise standards and make some exams a little bit harder. So that was the context for that particular piece.
But other than that column,
widely misunderstood, and that's been thrown at me by various people on Twitter.
But other than that column, vous ne regrettez rien.
Various dedicated lefties on Twitter have been trawling through the 55,000 odd tweets I've sent since I've been on Twitter since 2009. And I mean, it's extraordinary that they have the time to do this, but nonetheless.
Have they found anything interesting?
They found some imprudent things I may have said after midnight, after, you know, I had a couple of glasses of wine, and have now been kind of retweeting these as kind of evidence that I'm not a fit person to serve on the university regulator.
Maybe you should do what Boris Johnson did when he became Foreign Secretary. He issued a plenary apology for everything he'd written hitherto.
Maybe that's what you should do. Yeah. Either that or just delete my Twitter account.
Okay, Toby Young, and thanks very much for joining us. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffeehouse Shots, on the iTunes Store, or to the magazine itself for just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk/subscribe.